Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
Sup, I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we do something that nobody else is doing. We review comic books. Something that just doesn't happen anymore, but we do it, and we're the only ones that are.
Are people still out there reading these things? Because, you know, I feel like it's just...
I am.
Like, you don't read the back of a baseball card or the inside. Yeah.
I went to Jimmy John's the other day, and they were wrapping up comic books with a new issue of The Penguin. And I was like, whoa, that's going to be worth something someday. And they're like, yeah, this sandwich is going to be worth something someday. And I was like, you're not wrong.
What?
Wow. I sort of got what you meant. What? I think...
Maybe like newspaper wrapping up.
I don't know who
fish
to be mad at, you or Jimmy John's. I'm
Jimmy
very
John's,
confused.
Always Jimmy John's. Why don't we jump into the comic books? The Amazing Spider-Man
Jimmy's
number 44 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells. That Jimmy is a jerk. Art by John Romita Jr. This is the final issue of the Gang War storyline.
Woohoo!
So what did you think about the storyline, and what did you think about this issue in particular?
Well, from a purely from a map-making perspective, we've gone on quite a journey here. There was all the different territories with all the different people, and now all Doomstone.
Hey, spoilers, man. Don't give it away.
I'd spoil
it. No, it's
map.
Okay.
You can spoil
Justin
a map. Justin
has
map
always
exists.
Been the cartographer of the podcast. Other than that, though, what did you think about
you
the
You call
content?
This cartography, is what I said.
I thought it was an upswing from the last issue. I felt like did a little bit better in this issue. I liked what went down, how it went all went down. It was fun, the people jumping sides and that kind of stuff. Obviously Romita Jr., so the art's amazing, but yeah, I felt as compared to the last issue, I felt like this did a better job of landing the ship, and then fun kind of place to leave it, where he's like, yeah, I owe Spider-Man. And speaking of which, I'm going to go beat the shit out of him to show him how much I appreciate his help.
Great Tombstone.
Oh,
that's
thanks,
a great
man.
Tombstone. I feel like this event, I liked it from a plotting perspective
and a map making perspective.
Really, yeah. Great stuff. But I do think it didn't really amount to too much. I thought there'd be more. I did like there's a nice scene between Spider-Man and his buddy who nearly died. So that was cool. But it wasn't too much of a Spider-Man story. It felt like we were just witnessing an event.
It was a
so, like the title character, sense. This event petered out for me by the
end. Hey! Ooh.
Pete doesn't like that.
Oh, sorry.
Because that's his name. His name is synonymous with slowly failing. Petering out.
That's not. We get it.
This
story is
really strong, but I agree with you,
we
Justin.
We know what you're talking about.
These last couple of issues felt like moving the chess pieces around the board to me until we're like, yeah, Tombstone won. That's cool. And I don't really care about who is controlling the gangs of New York, but I do care
don't?
About these characters.
You live
and
in New York.
Yeah, it's
what
true.
I liked about the first couple of issues is the stress on Spider-Man, the focus on Spider-Man. And once again, very true to Zeb Wells' run, we got away from Spider-Man and focused on Tombstone instead in this final issue here, where Spider-Man almost felt like a tangential player. I did like everybody showing up to help out.
Yeah,
I love the
fun.
Moment of Shang-Chi and Iron Fist being like, what? We faced out a tank. You guys didn't know about that
thing?
That
was funny. Yeah.
Very fun bit in there. So I didn't hate it. And to your point, Pete, I like the John Romita Jr. art, of course. But this was not, I don't know, this was not the gangbuster ending, not to use a pun, that I was hoping for from this. Why don't we move on? Talk about
Wait, real quick, I just want to say, as a New Yorker, I want to welcome our Tombstone Overlord.
Oh, nice.
And,
yeah.
And really get to know his particular brand of pizza. Crime. Of crime. Of pizza and crime.
Crime and pizza. Same thing, honestly.
If you ask me. That's an autobiography.
$4 for a slice? Come on.
Now that's a crime, huh? Forget about it, says Brooklyn.
Room service, run by the Hobgoblin, I believe. Room service number zero from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Elsa Charettier. This is right off of a Kickstarter that they did to launch this book. So presumably there's going to be some more issues after this. Mm-hmm. But this is focusing on a secret society that lets the rich people of the world get away with absolutely everything. It's disturbing. It's upsetting. The Elsa Charettier art is stunning, as you might expect.
Unupsetting.
Unupsetting, as you might expect. For
upsetting in a good way. You know,
love everlasting.
Setting up.
Great iconic main character as well. Really good stuff.
I agree. I feel like JT4 is killing the game right now. Duke Yang can do any wrong. I mean, this is just like a creepy but fantastic story. Love the art. The kind of red villain dude is super cool. I can't wait to read the next issue. I'm having a blast with this.
It's some nice sort of class commentary. It feels like good little twists and turns in here, you know. Mm-hmm. And whose side are you on? Are you rooting for the rich person who gets to kill indiscriminately? Or are you rooting against him? I don't know.
Whew, good question. Why don't we go around and say whether you're rooting for the rich person who can kill without any compunctions and have no repercussions whatsoever, or the regular person who dies.
And who is moral guessing? And dies.
Well, I'm rooting for the guy in the red sachet who is, trying to earn a living working for a madman. You know what I mean?
Of course. Pete's got the blue collar back. The blue collar murderer who's like... out there,
yes, we can, bro. Get come on,
yes, yeah.
Wow, Rosie the murderer. Pete's rooting for Rosie the murderer.
All right, Amazon's Attack number 5 from DC Comics, written by Jesse Campbell, art by Vasco Georgiev. In this issue, we seem to get a big reveal of the villain who has been behind everything, manipulating our Amazons as well as Mary Marvel. I love this series. I think the tone is so fun and dark at the same time. It's not at all what I have expected from the title, but Jesse Campbell killing it on the writing, Vasco Georgiev killing it on the art. Having a great time reading this book.
Yeah, I mean, first off, amazing cover. Like, all caps, amazing. It's hilarious. You got Peacemaker.
Of course, you're talking about the Sweater Weather cover, right, Pete?
Nope. I'm talking about the Peacemaker looking through the scope cover.
Capital S, capital W, capital E, capital A, capital T, capital H, capital
bit.
E.
This is fun
R. You can stop me at literally
Wait,
any
you,
time.
You throw an H in there?
Trying
you
to stop.
I don't know.
He doesn't know how to spell sweater. Fucking guy went to
he's
Cornell.
He's too turned on by these covers.
Yeah,
we should say.
Trying to touch his nipples and spell at the same time. Anyways, as I was saying.
How do you touch the alphabet on your screen if you're also tweaking your nipples, Pete?
Exactly.
Explain that to me.
What alphabet on your screen? What is happening?
I feel like you can spell.
This is a fantastic issue. Hilarious.
Everyone listening knows, we are also sort of, as an homage, in our sweater weather outfits, which is like skimpy tops. And as Pete, because I'm always like, it's bathing suits. And Pete's always like, it's a sweater up top and something skimpy on the butt.
Yeah, this is hilarious and amazing art. Tons of action. Heartbreaking, but great. I really am just having a blast with this comic.
I think the issues – I've been liking this comic more with each issue. I feel like it was a little bit like – I couldn't really find the strong narrative. It was building, yeah. But it was a little bit disparate. And I thought this issue brought it together in such a sweet way. I loved the tone of – the Amazons being sort of hated and feared around the world, mm-hmm. I thought was really great. And the emotional impact that has was awesome with the gunshot that happens. I also thought it was an interesting riff. It reminded me of the original George Perez Wonder Woman run, which Ooh. Was about a gun. And this was sort of the flip. It was a bullet. And I thought that was such a smart way to take a huge piece of Wonder Woman history and flip it on its end and have it be meaningful again by having the bullet be sort of the object they're talking about in the same way the gun was
holding the bullet
back
in
the day. Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, I'll tell you, we have Josie Campbell is coming on our live show.
Oh, next man, we should talk to her about this.
Well, we'll see. We're going to be talking to her about Boom Studios' I Heart Skull Crusher.
But can we talk to her about Amazon's attack, please?
I think we'll skip
Pete, that. If you mention Amazon's aura attacking in general, the whole you're going to be in
I'm just
going to
be thinking
trouble.
About, she's going to be talking about Boom, and I'm going to be like, oh, man.
Hey, Amazon's attack. What? Sorry.
Woke
I love
from
you.
A dream.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I've said too much.
How many rom-coms am I in right now?
Avengers Twilight number 3 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Daniel Acuña. In this issue, Captain America is attempting to free what remains of Iron Man from the raft and fighting Iron Man of the Wasp's errant son. Now, Tom Brevoort hyped up this issue. Shots fired, definitely. But Tom Brevoort has hyped up this issue. He said first, this is one of the best Avengers issues he has ever edited in the entire time he's been editing Avengers, which has been about 25 years. He also called this That's amazing. Chip Zdarsky was like, this guy never compliments anybody. And in his last newsletter, he was like, there's at least two heck yeah moments that'll make you shout out loud. That's a lot of hype going into this issue.
A lot of hype.
Do you feel like it paid off on that?
Well, I will say I did enjoy this issue, and the moments that are perhaps the most obvious heck yeah, Don heck yeah issues
moments you learned something. Here.
I do that. Well, of course, Don Heck was one of the creators of Wonder Man. Something I've always
yes, we
about.
All know that. We all know. That.
Yeah, we all. Well,
you're a Wonder Man fan, so I would.
I'm a Wonder Man fan, so I definitely
created it. I mean, yeah.
Wonder fan, if you are.
Indeed, if I am.
I mean, I think
fan,
this,
if you are.
This issue, I'm glad I didn't hear about all this hype because maybe it would have ruined it for me, but I really like this issue. I love the art style. It's got this kind of like painted old school feel to it, which I think is great. The kind of older Cap is very enjoyable in this. Great story. I had a great time on this issue. I'm glad I didn't know about all the hype. It might have ruined it, but yeah, this was cool.
Yeah, my armchair psychologicalizing, I can't use words anymore, is that Tom Brevoort is definitely feeling like I'm at the end of my Avengers tenure and I'm feeling very poignant and nostalgic for this because I don't know if this is the best Avengers issue that he's ever edited, but it is a good issue.
It's a great issue.
It's great.
Chip Zdarsky writes some really good action in here. There are, in fact, multiple moments where we're like, hell yeah, this is awesome.
I think there's four, actually. There's four moments.
Yeah. Really?
I'll just name them.
Detail them.
Yeah.
Say them.
I will detail them, and everyone's mileage may vary. But I think the Bullseye, Hawkeye.
Yep.
Well, was
okay.
great.
Yeah.
Seeing the shield was dope. That was very cool. Yeah.
Two.
Ms. Marvel stepping up. I can I can carry you all. Yeah. And then Thor, lightning strike.
Oh my God. That's true. It's a sweet Avengers issue. If you're an Avengers fan, it goes in the direction you've wanted since we've had the beginning of this series. Daniel Acuña's art is stunning, like we've been talking about across the board with this title. So I don't know. I'm still like, it is in the shadow of a lot of other things, from Dark Knight to oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the name of
Kingdom Come.
Thank you.
Kingdom Come.
I was going to
say
particular
Beast Wars.
Beast Wars?
I was going to say Peggy Sue Got Married, the movie
Nicolas Cage. He's really good at that. So it's a good title. If you're looking for a Get Adventures title, pick this up. What are we talking about?
I was going to say ham sandwich. Oh, sorry, what?
If you're an Iron Man fan, there's no better Iron Man story this week. And I'll just plot it out for you. Iron Man's a head in a jar who then gets dropped in the ocean. The end.
Because we will talk about a better Iron Man.
100%. What a real demon in a bottle situation, am I right?
Hey-o!
I was going to say, Black,
number 28 and 28.5 from Image Comics. The first one is by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, by Eduardo Ferragato. The second one is by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, with art by Marcelo Costa. If you haven't been following along here, our main characters have been fighting in a trial run by this multiversal something or other called Existenz. Somebody else is going to have to host this podcast, I think, at this point.
Someone went in and switched all the note cards in Alex's brain wall, because he's saying stuff that's close to right, but definitely different. Existenz, the vaguely softcore pornographic sci-fi movie from the 90s,
It's Cronenberg, right? Like, he puts a thing on his face and it's like really fucked up.
What a great pull. We all have broken brains, but that's a great... Sometimes the pee in the Cabbage Patch doll head comes out and has something great.
Anyway, they are going through a number of trials to try to prove themselves and save Earth. What we've been following here is initially, choose your own adventure is the wrong thing, but like a multiversal path of what Nathan and Marshall would do differently in these scenarios. They have been branching out farther as the titles have been going, but there's still parallels between the two of them. Here they're facing the third trial and go in extremely different directions. This event continues to be absolutely phenomenal and creative. It is a must read on both issues if you're into this title. I'm blown away by the creativity that's going on here.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's just structurally amazing what they're pulling off right here. I mean, the art continues to be artistically impressive. The story is really fun. Tons of action, amazing panels, huge fights. Love the pace, the tone, big last panel we get. This is fun and exciting. And Point Five is just kind of like you're at the same event from a different perspective with different kind of points of view. It's just awesome. It's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything that's been said. But is the takeaway from both of these issues that, like, whatever you do, life sucks?
Yeah. A little bit. Well, what they've been positing,
big guy, but
what they've been positing over the first, I think, 2 months of this event is okay, here's how Nathan would be better in this situation. And then we got to see, here's how actually Marshall would be better in this situation. This one, they both lose. So
one worse than the other, one in a grand, less emotional disaster, and one in a much more emotional but less grand disaster. So you could say that one is a better hero, but also I think maybe the lesson is the emotional one in 28, the characters are reeling from a previous emotional event, so they behave rashly and make mistakes. In the other, much more organized, but their heroism and success leads to a big emotional tragedy. So
I think the lesson is Marshall Mathers. You know what I mean?
Wow.
God, I couldn't agree more. Great. Cool. Yeah. Why don't we move on to
spaghetti.
What if Venom number one from Marvel, written by Jeremy Holt, by Jesus Hervéz. This is, per the title, imagining what if other people came Venom. In this first issue, we get to see She-Hulk become Venom. And spoiler here, it seems like rather than with what-if stories, we're getting to see the beginning and branching off in different ways. This is actually a continuing story. So whereas She-Hulk gets into the first issue, we're seeing how Wolverine might end up with it in the second issue. But what did you guys think about this one?
And I think if we can just parse the cover for a second, it looks like we're going to get five different versions here, the first of which is She-Hulk. Then you got Wolverine, looks like Doctor Strange, Loki, and Moon Knight.
Ooh, that's fun.
So that's a nice – I like we get a little broadcasting of that. I thought that She-Hulk was an interesting first choice. It feels like very random, but also I appreciated that randomness. It felt really nice to have a character that I would not at all associate with Venom. And the way it was done I thought was really cool, as almost like a horror thriller where She-Hulk is unaware of what's happening through a lot and then sort of accepts it. And, you know, falls from grace as a result of it. So nice arc, and I like where we ended up. It's a little bit like, here's a sad story about a hero you like. See you later. Come back next month.
I think She-Hulk's a great choice because it's like if somebody else is going to get the power, who could do it better? You immediately think She-Hulk. You know what I mean? So I think it's
one of those, doesn't do it better.
I know, but she should.
She suffers.
I
mean, if they were,
Realistically, but yeah, I hear you. But I just think that She-Hulk is a great choice because I think, you know, you have somebody who can wield strength in such a great way that it doesn't overpower her and make her this kind of like, you know. So I think it was a cool choice in that, you know, just to kind of be like she can wield power a little bit smarter than most. So it'd be an interesting choice.
I like this a lot better than I thought I would, given that I've been a little iffy, no pun intended, by the What If titles that have come out recently. I don't love Venom in general, but I thought this was fun. It was a fun book. I don't know the specific continuity, but it seems like Jeremy Holt found a pocket where She-Hulk was working at a place, and if she stayed a little bit later, she might end up walking past the church where Eddie Brock ultimately got the Venom symbiote. So I like that idea. That seems very classic to What If. I also don't love the idea of having continuity with What If, but at the same time, I'm curious to see how this spins out, you know, and how it continues to get worse and worse potentially over multiple issues.
Have you checked out the television show What If?
Yes, I have watched that, Justin.
Because there is some continuity there, similarly. I also thought the art was very nice in this comic, something that I'm the one who always mentions.
Yes, you found it to be super pineapple bananas, right?
That's exactly right.
That's
what
a saying.
That is a saying, says the man who says it. I also thought it was funny the way that Eddie Brock is just like, ah, this is so scary, and he runs out of there. Very funny take on Eddie Brock in this.
Yeah, it is a fun take on the Brockster.
Green Arrow number 9 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Sean Isaacs. Green Arrow is breaking into the Hall of Justice.
Yeah. Hall of Order, Alex. And I, for one, am happy to. I welcome the Hall of Order being in charge now.
You boo. You dad.
Coming face to face would be Belle of the Ball for DC Comics, Amanda Waller, the character that they love putting in literally every single book.
Waller, it's Green Arrow. She plays hard, baby.
Yeah, Green Arrow versus the Wall.
Mm-hmm. That all said, I like this. Again, I was sort of trepidatious by there is so much Amanda Waller in DC Comics right now, but this is good. Having Green Arrow do a diehard, it's probably not a diehard, but like a just a break.
Existence. Existence. He's sort of like. Yeah.
I'd call it more of a Johnny Mnemonic, honestly.
Wow. Yeah, I think this was a great issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. Love the art, love the action, some badass stuff going on. And I felt like it was a cool setup for more to come. And I like, you know, spoilers, but I like the Diggle reveal. I'm a sucker for the Diggler.
Yeah. the event that has sort of left us here with Waller and the Hall of Order and what's coming down in the future for Waller, I feel like it sort of landed with a little bit of like a dull thud. It was like, yep, Waller's worse than you think.
I thought
this issue did a great job of actually telling a good story where there are really clear consequences. Peacemaker, who's like the Wolverine of the DC universe, man, this guy's showing up everywhere.
Put him in more stuff. He's hilarious.
I think there are other options for characters who you can have be even funny and like a dick.
Who, Lobo? Come on.
No, well, Space Wolf.
Jump off of something you're saying. I think I've been very, you know, I didn't read the event where Waller was on Earth 3, so I don't know specifically what happened, but I kind of assumed she was taken over by somebody else, or there's like somebody else, you know, Ultraman is behind it or something like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe he still is, but I think this issue went a good ways away to explaining why she is doing what she's doing in terms of flipping over the DC universe that I liked. Like, agreed. I think Joshua Williamson gave her a really good villain motivation here, which was something that we've been lacking thus far. So good issue and kind of a surprising key issue in terms of the Uber story that DC is telling.
Exactly, yeah. Because I feel like Josh Williamson is great, great writer, great storyteller. But now, because of his position at DC, like, he's got his eyes on the whole story. And so I think that just informs so much. So this standalone issue, I feel like, is just such a win in relation to a lot of other issues that are sort of telling pieces. This is actually giving us more than a lot of what we saw in the crossover, even, I think. So, I'm on board. And there's some great stuff happening in Green Arrow. We got a little preview of the future things that are happening. And, like, it's a fun book lately.
Yeah.
Ice Cream Man, number 38 from Boomage Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martine Marazzo. In this issue, we're following a clone of a guy named Gary.
It's not a clone.
Who is in a facility with a bunch of other Garys who are doing meaningless tasks. Are they meant for something more? Is there a world outside? That's what they explore here. I'll tell you what, love this issue, as usual, with Ice Cream Man. Surprisingly hopeful.
Yeah.
For an issue of Ice Cream Man, which I was shocked about.
I'm surprised you said that. As the one who mentioned this on the stack that I was looking forward to, I feel like this is another banger-ish. I mean, I don't know how they keep doing it. Like, every issue, I'm like, they can't live up to this bar that they've set, and they do. Gary number 38, I love you, bro.
Yeah, who's your favorite Gary?
Live free and happy, you know? I felt bad.
Live free or die hard, I always say.
Mm. Yeah, is that what you always say? amazingly creepy art, amazing story. This is always creative, always delivering. And, you can't help but feel like Gary a little bit. You know what I mean?
Wow. We love this book. Love every issue. I think it's the most consistent, original, great bit of storytelling and anthology series with the thread of ice cream running throughout. In this issue, it's just literally just ice cream.
What do you eat for dinner, Hot Shot?
Yeah, no, of course I'm a grown up. I have a giant bowl of ice cream.
Thank
you. What would you do, Hot Shot? Eat ice cream? Speed.
Wow, you're really Alexing out. Which, as we know,
a little bit,
petering out, but with movie quotes from.
Well, so to jump into this specifically, the idea of this issue is you have all these clones. You have one specific clone, Gary 38, slowly discovers over the course of the issue that outside of the walled facility they're in, there might be something more. And it's very specifically, at least from my direction, about whatever industry you're in as a worker. Why are you doing the thing you're doing? You are doing it every day. Maybe there's something more outside
maybe
that you could do
better
if you free yourself.
It's worse.
Well, but it could be. But I don't think that's implied by the book at all. Like, for sure, maybe off paddle in issue 2 of Gary 38, he runs into sea full of sharks or a room of spikes or something like that, I guess. But this is a lot more in line with the other things that W. Maxwell Prince has been doing, like Swan Songs and Clown was the other book, that feel like they're weird and they're dark, but they have slightly more hopeful endings.
I believe the book was called Ha Ha, but was about
Ha Ha. Yes, exactly. Yes. So I don't know. I was very surprised that this seems like, hey, you person who is in dead-end job. Hey, you person who is a dead-end job. You can break out of this cycle. You can find something else.
Yeah.
You
might be a blue-collar murderer. You can get to other things. You can have another job.
You might end up on a dead body of other versions of yourself, but you might have a couple seconds of freedom and really get to taste life.
That's nice. Alex is taking the main character's point of view, and Pete, you're taking the point of view of all the dead Garys. Yeah, if you want to sort of give deuces, you pass a bunch of corpses of yourself. Get going. And I would also say, like, I made this comparison when we had W. Maxwell Prince on the show, but a very George Saunders-esque tone. Mm-hmm. And this issue, I thought, was the most George Saunders of maybe any of them.
I'm sorry. I'm familiar with Colonel Saunders, but I'm not sure when you say George Saunders. Yeah.
Colonel George Saunders.
Yes. George Saunders only had 16 secret spices.
Okay.
Oh, man, now we're all Alex.
I will say, as constant, we've been fans of Ice Cream Man for 38 issues at this point. It is surprising to me the relative hopeful tint that it's taken over the past couple of issues in particular. Maybe by the past couple of issues, I honestly mean past year. I'm not 100% sure, but it was so nihilistic for so long. It was like, hey, great news, you're going to die someday.
I don't know why you're getting your hopes up. He's just setting you up for more dark.
No, I think it's interesting to look at W. Maxwell Prince as a creator, and I think looking at things more hopefully
issue, maybe. Like, I think
it's
next
been several
issue
issues, with the exception of whatever those fuzzy creatures were a couple of issues back, where it was like, war is bad, which was a great issue, but that was definitely like, hey, we're all going to die in war someday, enjoy. But a lot of these issues have had a more upward tinge at the end.
But I also think he's trying to add some variety to the book.
Yeah,
so another thing he talked about when we had him on the show is that he was sort of like, yeah, I know it's a little like, I think he's like, I need to break up the tone a little bit so we do get the hopeful moments. But I don't think it's like, I'd be surprised if it was a full upswing where eventually it's just going to be like good vibes for the whole story.
Rainbows.
Probably.
Shirt tails.
I'll also say, just to steal a page from Pete's book, great cover. One of my favorite covers of the month with just all the little Garys crawling.
Oh, yeah. That was intense.
Terrifying.
That,
all those Garys with like sweater.
Yeah, those
on.
Garys. I just tell you what.
Some Skippy on down below.
Spider Punk Arms Race number one from Marvel, written by Cody Ziegler, art by Justin Mason. This is a return to Spider Punk's dimension where everybody is anarchic. They've killed off Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, the big villain. So, of course, there are some new villains coming into their wake. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, I mean, first off, the art is just worth it for the art alone here. This is just super tight bananas, and all my catchphrases in one here. I love the style. I love this kind of...
Pip don't slip.
Yeah, thank you for throwing that in there. Yeah, this is just great action, great writing, and it's a lot of fun. Just cool cameos and team-ups. I just had a blast. As soon as I opened up this book, I was like, take me away to this punk place. I'm all about it.
All punk? Punk planet? If everyone's punk, is anyone punk? Have you thought about that?
Punk.
Yeah. You thought about that, Pete? Because I will say that is a little, I felt a little bit reading this. I like
think
Spider
about
punk
that every day.
Yeah. How are you punk on a daily basis, Pete?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Oh, wow. Good answer. Nice. Pete's a secret punk. Alex, how are you punk on a daily basis?
Well, I know you guys can only on Zoom see me from a chest up. Below that, it's all safety pins.
Wow. Wow.
I've often imagined you that way.
Your wow. Poor wife.
Nice. That's why you poor are wife, very still.
Poor wife, happy life is what I say.
That's wow. What they say. Wow, great. I forgot at all what I was talking about.
You were talking about how you're a punk every right. Day of your life.
I just piss in the corner of every room that I'm in. Pretty punk.
I'm sorry. I think you're a cat. I think you're a cat is what you're saying.
Explain the difference.
Same thing.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing.
Sorry, I don't know the difference.
Fair enough.
Puff the punk? I don't know. This takes place in Philly. I miss a little bit of the Spider-Punk from the animated movie, the Spider-Verse movie, who's like British. This guy's
which one?
The main primary.
The newest one?
Yes, yes.
Or the one before that?
The newest
one. Okay.
He wasn't into the Spider-Verse.
One. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen him.
We were just testing about what the names were.
Hey, stop quizzing. Give up. You can't quiz us always.
It's hard to turn it off.
Oh, man. I know. You should see Pat Sajak when he gets home. He's like, oh, spin man, the wheel. That's good. And his family's like, stop. Stop it.
I can't stop.
Give me a. Would you like to buy a vowel? Dad, no. This is, we're at school. I miss a little bit of that. This is a different thing. I also felt like Captain Anarchy. I was like, how does that work? How did Captain Anarchy come about having stars and stripes and an A on the shield? It was just like the premise felt a little weighed down by just the Marvel-ness of it. But I actually really like the backup story in this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. I want to see him be more punk. I want to see him play. Let's have a concert. It made me long for Spider-Gwen, the series, where it was very much mm-hmm. like that, Spider-Gwen, Mary Jane.
That's a good call. This is I'm forgetting who invented Spider-Punk, who we had on the show, who had a bone to pick with me because I'd asked about how you do an anarchic character in a corporation like Marvel who's owned by Disney. But I honestly think that point still stands. It is hard to do actual punk and actual anarchy. And I say this as a very staid, uptight white man who does not do punk at all. But at the same time, I think like, it's hard to do that in a comic book format. You got to do, and particularly for Marvel, like to actually do a Spider-Punk, you would have to be, I don't know, Fantagraphics or something like that to make it work.
Yeah.
So as it is, this is a fun story. I had a good time reading this comic book. Is it punk? Probably not. But wow. That's okay.
As always, we end each review with punk or not punk. And we're going to go with not punk on this one.
Did you say you were a stained white dude?
Stayed.
Stayed?
No, he's like stayed. Stay, like the band Stained.
You stay in one stayed. Place?
No, I'm like the band Stained. Justin's right.
Okay.
It says here Spider-Punk created by Dan Slott. Is that who we were talking to?
Nope.
Interesting.
No, it was whoever wrote the first title, the first Spider-Punk book.
Is it the first Spider-Punk series?
Yes.
Yeah, because that was Dan Slott, like you said.
No, I think Dan Slott wrote him into like a Spider-Verse.
Yeah, he introduced him in Spider-Verse, but somebody else created him. I'm sorry. I'm forgetting. I apologize. You'll look it up, but The Flash number 6, DC Comics, written by Simon Spurrier, art by Mike Diodato Jr. This is the final issue, the first arc of this horror take on The Flash as The Flash and his wife and the other Flash all fight against the stillness, among other things. Man, I love this book. It's so creative. The contrast. This is the first time I think I've seen a real contrast between Barry Allen and Wally West
in yes.
years, other than like, I'm Barry Allen. I'm a serious guy. And Wally West is like, I'm a funny guy. There's legitimately a difference in the characterizations of them that Simon Spurrier is putting in here, which is so undervalued in comics. I was very impressed by this issue.
I've been loving this.
Wait, before
run.
We get too far into this, Justin, is there anything that you were looking up that you want to add?
I believe, the person that wrote the first series was Cody Ziegler, the current writer.
Oh, okay. So maybe Cody.
Cody, yeah. Because we did have Cody on the show.
He's still going to be mad at me, I guess.
Yep. I'm glad we both are.
But good. You and Cody, I'm aligned. The what I was going to say about this, though, is I have been loving this. The idea, I said this on the live show, that like the flashes are always like so shiny and like forthright, just trying so hard. And it's about like, just, I want to be faster. I need to go faster. And then some sort of arcane science. I love that this is like absolutely different. It's much more like metaphysical, mystical. We don't want to know what's happening. There's not even a mystery to solve. Like the flashes aren't trying to solve something. They're just like, what is happening? And they're being dicks to each other. And Wally's like fucking up. And I love that. I think it's so good. I love this sort of like, secrets are a big factor here. Keeping secrets, a little bit of addiction, maybe is that we're going to get to. Family and the secrets you keep within a family. Like, I don't know. This is just one of my favorite Flash runs in a long time.
Yeah, I think I love the tripped out cool covers that we have here. We have some prose, which is interesting. The art, though, I mean, just so tripped out and amazing. The use of yellows and oranges, just some fun panels, some amazing page layouts. The lady wearing the old dude Halloween mask was such a hilarious kind of weird thing to see in the comic because it's already still. So it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of, it was such a crazy kind of image that
unsettling.
Really jumped out to me. Yeah, unsettling. Thank you.
It was Jed McKay, by the way, who wrote the first Spider-Pog series, who was very mad at me. And I remember when he came on the live show, he was like, hey, I have a book, dude. To pick with you.
I love that. You know, Jed McKay's my guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's your guy. Yeah. Clearly, I guess, not my guy. I'm sorry, Jed. And I'm sorry, Cody. And I apologize to the whole comic book.
No, Alex, do your apologies at the end, like usual.
Yeah, Jesus.
Okay, I'll hold them until Dead X-Men number 2 for Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Peter Nguyen, art Bernard Chang, and Guillermo Sana. We have a bunch of X-Men who are traveling, not exactly through the multiverse, but through the Moiraverse, if you will.
Oh,
the Moiraverse of Madness, coming soon.
Everyone's favorite.
You've got an evil Moira MacTaggert who is chasing them. They are trying to escape from these different timelines that were created by the Moira engine, which was created by Mr. Sinister. What'd you guys think?
Well, yeah, they find out they're in the Moira's seventh timeline. And yeah,
her seventh life.
I don't know who this is for or what this is about or why we're doing this, but I'm glad they stopped to talk to a waterfall because, you know, you shouldn't chase them, but you can stop and talk to them. You know what I mean?
That's right.
All I would say is please stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Yeah, talk to the rivers and lakes. I will say that when I saw the Moira who's wielding like a badass head axe, I was like, Pete would like this panel. He would like this panel. Maybe.
It's a badass image. You know what I mean? You got an axe with like a cool skull on it. Cool, badass stuff. But it's like, the continuity is so deep and so weird that I'm just like, who's like, yeah, Seventh Life of Moira, what's up? That's my favorite timeline. Like, fucking
so
yeah!
Here's what I throw out at you. So the idea here is they jump to the, if it is the seventh timeline, I don't remember.
Seventh Life, yeah.
Yes, they jump to the Seventh Life of Moira. And it's supposed to go to one way, but it's been corrupted by this Moira that is following them so that Ultrons have taken over the universe. I like the idea, like we talked about with the first issue, of a riff on Exiles, where you have this team of X-Men jumping through the multiverse. But in this case, they're jumping through the Moiraverse. They're jumping through a different timelines that have been corrupted by this other Moira. That's cool.
Is it? Because what you just said doesn't sound cool because it's like, you know, it's awesome.
Well, so Exiles,
you know,
is one of my favorite.
Moira. So,
Exiles is one of my favorite underrated titles. It is essentially Sliders, but with X-Men. Very fun. Really good title. Got into some great character stuff. The thing that worked about that is it had a room to play and really grow characters like room. Blink and I'm forgetting who it was. The guy who had like angel wings and
Mimic,
angel.
I believe.
Mimic, there you go. And other characters like that, kill some people off, bring some other people on. It was long form storytelling. This is a short form storytelling with a short amount of issues. And so it doesn't
seems
quite
like
work
it's taking forever.
Well, it doesn't quite work as well because they don't have like nine different timelines or 10 or an unlimited amount of timelines to jump through. It's a limited amount of timelines. I love to explore the different timelines that Moira created when she reset her timeline. That's a cool idea. We're not getting enough space to play with that here.
Well, I think even beyond like Exiles was a premise and then an open world with infinite possibility where, you know, each arc or each issue is them jumping to a new world that they don't know what's happening and they have to do one thing like Sliders. Great. This is literally like they have a confined box where it's like, hey, you have to get close enough to take a psychic informational read on a Moira that's still organic enough so that you can pull the information about her 10 lives or whatever, so we can bring them back to Professor X, who's got his whole own other thing. And then it was just such an info dump. Mr. Sinister, it's so intense, it's so heavy, it's such a tight box and a tight goal for them to do, so much so that they finished their mission because Professor X needed the information for the Fall of X book. And in this, they're like, so what else could we do? Should we track down maybe we could solve a Dominion? We can figure out how to beat the Dominion because no one would ever expect the Dominion. It's like, how do you beat a Dominion? What a Dominion is this sort of like Mr. Sinister controlled techno-organic space god. And it's like, it's so heady and out of space. And then they don't even do that. They realize that they've fucked up the timeline because they gave Moira this information on how to leap between her lives. So now she's doing it, and now they're like, oh no, we messed up. Here we go.
Yeah. It's the thing about Exiles is like, it was always, we're trying to get home. You know, it was a very basic Star Trek Voyager Sliders type thing. And this, they have a tinge of it, but then they kind of move on to other things. And if it was, we're trapped in this Moira engine and we need to travel through multiple timelines, awesome.
Yeah,
would love to read that. That's not what this title is.
But on the positive side, I like these characters. I like the fact that they are jumping through and they're like, oh no, how do we figure this out? Let's solve this. And then they have to try to do it. It's a nice mission.
Would you say your favorite character is the waterfall?
Of all the water 100%. Characters, yeah, the fall.
All water. The water.
Yeah, I just want to give it a lot of TLC, honestly.
Yeah,
no, nice. Boo. I'm sorry that I brought it back up.
Sorry that I delivered it with my left eye. World Tree, number 8, from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art JT4. By Fernando Blanco. We are finally moving forward here as our main characters get a last will and testament from the character who died, and we're getting our naked lady, who now wears overalls, I believe.
Some clothes. It's like, yeah, you know, it's, we're finishing up the sweater weather event.
In this exactly. What'd you guys think about this one?
Crazy cool art. The mix of mediums in this comic is really impressive. Like, the way they kind of have like different kind of styles layered over different stuff.
The glitching that happens at the end.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so cool and really makes you kind of scared and worried in such a great and interesting way. This is an intense story with great art. This is a fantastic package.
Yeah, I agree. It's wild that this, the premise is maybe what we got in this issue, the 8th issue, which is crazy. It almost felt like a preamble series that sets up the world, and now this is what we're going to be doing from here on out. But it's exciting. The part that I think is funny, it's this book is like scary in a good way, and the characters are under threat a lot. It's great. But when they keep talking about the undernet, I'm like, that sort of sounds like a joke. When they're like, beware the undernet. And I was like, undernet.
Yeah, I have undernet my bathing suit.
Mm-hmm. Sweater.
I will just mention, and this is probably something I should not mention, but I've been watching some episodes of Three Body Problem on Netflix.
Ooh, little.
I have not read the books, but watching the episodes, it was like, huh. This is very similar to World Tree. So
really?
Yeah. I want to go back and read the books of Three Body Problem and see how much that inspired this, because honestly, there's like a lot of one-to-ones going on there.
Wow. But, interesting. I would not have guessed that, but I don't know the book and the underlying work at all.
Yeah. We'll see. Giant Size Fantastic Four, number one from Marvel, written by Fabian Nsueza, art by Chris Lee. In this issue, we're meeting a secret king of Atlantis, Lemuria, who is finally able to go to power because Reed Richards frees him from an undersea prison. And this is the Submariner from before Submariner, who ruled before a Dom Mariner, if you will. And yeah, what do you think about this one?
I mean, I will say, I feel like the pitch for this is like Imperious Rex, huh? What if there was a guy? And literally, it's like the Namor says Imperious Rex all the time. Let's make that a thing. So that was funny. I also think it's funny that Reed Richards is like, oh, I know these runes on this door. It says Tomb of Atonement or whatever. And he's like, let's go in. I feel like he's a genius, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's like number one, number two, smartest person in the Marvel Universe, canonically. I think that's a mistake. Don't push open the door of atonement.
I think, you know, this was very enjoyable. You know, at first I was like, oh, it's a Submariner. And they're like, no, no, no. This is Natless. And I was like, okay, all right, my bad. But yeah, I, you know, they're like, all right, we're going to fight. But then they're like, no, let's talk. And I was like, oh, that's adorable. Great art, fun action. This felt like a classic kind of Fantastic Four good issue. So I felt pretty good about it.
Well, this is also, I think, the first giant size issue that really paid off on the premise of bringing this back, because this Natless character redefines a lot of the mythology of Atlantis. It recenters Namor. The Fantastic Four are kind of side to it because they're like, spoilers here, but they're like, should we have freedom? I don't know. I guess we'll see. Goodbye. But this is something, versus the previous giant size issues that we've seen, this is something that I feel like people could really pick up on and use and create some really interesting dramatic tension between this character who may be good, may be bad, we don't know, but is trying to reunite all these Atlantean tribes, is a rival for Namor that creates a really interesting texture for the Marvel Universe. So this is good stuff. I thought this was a good issue that potentially paved the way for more down the road.
It was also funny when they go and like visit Namor in prison. He looks like shit, man. Yeah, he looks bad.
Awful.
He looks really drawn. His hair's, you can tell someone is meant to be looking bad when they have strands
Justin,
of hair over their face.
But prison is not just like a gym, you know, where they give you some meals. You know what I mean? There's more to it.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks, Pete. Anything you want to expand on that?
It's not a gym, but and they do give you meals, you said, right?
Yeah. I always thought it was a gym that gives you meals.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
I'm one pissing in the corner away from that getting thrown in jail, so I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'd say
you can only do it so many times. It's like the punch card at free coffee. I'm up at 9 pissings, and they're going to toss me in jail if I do it again.
You're going to get a free one pretty soon.
Hey, here's the thing. Alex, they're all free the way I do it.
I keep having to pay for them. What's that about? The Penguin, number 7 from DC Comics.
Where are you putting the money? Real quick.
I can't reveal that. Written by Tom King, art by Stephen Subic. This is the second issue, jumping back in time, showing us how the Penguin and Batman have always been working together and completely redefining the relationship. Spoilers here, but by the end of the issue, we find out that the Penguin has always been a mole for Batman. His identity as the walk-walk, I'm wearing a peg monocle, coming up with crazy screams thing is all something that he worked up with Batman. And in fact, a lot of the things that he's done have not been crimes at all. They've just been sort of fronts to get the heat off of him. That's a wild big swing from Tom King, but I'll tell you what, it works.
Tom King, big swing. The way
Penguin.
Exactly. We're all saying stuff. The way that I think this is a good story. I think it's funny though, like it's a little bit undercutting to be like, oh, this interesting stuff I wear, it's dumb. I just put it on to look dumb. I was like, oh, I thought the whole thing was he was a little bit of a weirdo. And it was like, it's sort of like almost retconning the iconic nature of this character to now he's just like, eh, this cigarette holder.
He kind of just did a Kaiser Soze kind of bullshit where he's like, I've been faking it this whole time. Batman's dumb as shit. I love the art. The stylized look of this art is really cool. It sets a cool, twisted Gotham kind of tone for this Penguin versus Batman that's coming up. I can't wait till we get to the kind of action that we got teased really early on. Right now it's just a lot of talking.
I like this series. I'm not trying to talk it down. But another issue I was thinking about when I was reading this is I feel like so many of our Batman stories now are like, okay, it's in the past. And that's where Batman was doing stuff. And I was like, why can't we tell what is wrong with Batman in the present that
we're not telling today?
That we're not telling these stories, these like more definitional stories in a present day Batman setting.
I don't know. I think that's what Chip Zdarsky is getting towards in Batman. He's brought him to his lowest point where he's in prison next to the Joker, imprisoned by a robot alternate identity version of himself.
I think that's very cool, too. Yeah. And maybe that is the reason why. It's like Batman is so far down the continuity pipeline that he's like, I have a Zur-En-Arr personality I'm fighting against, and I'm fighting against this robot version of myself called Failsafe, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's that maybe it's like, you know what?
I'll keep doing that.
I'm going to go back to when he just had a cave.
Do you think there's a possibility, just because we got Zur-En-Arr over in Batman, and I know we haven't been religiously reading Detective Comics, but that's dealing with the whole Thomas Wayne evil version of Batman.
Yeah.
Do you think this is another example of, I'm trying to think how to phrase this, but like people not knowing what to do with Grant Morrison, like Grant Morrison being like, here's 1 million ideas.
Yeah.
It is Batman. And then everybody being like, all right, I'll pick up on that, I guess. But
well, I do think we're headed for, similar to the X-Men universe, not quite as intense, where it's like they're headed for a hard reset. So it's like, hey, get your zoomies out, writers. Let's get wild. Let's kill some folks in weird ways, like a book we're going to talk about in a little bit. And maybe the Batman stories are doing that. It's like, let's go hard, go deep, because in the recently announced event, Absolute Power, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the end of that's going to be like a whole very big flag in the ground. Here's a different version of a lot of these characters.
Resurrection, and I'll also mention, it's not like we're not getting Batman stories where you're like, I'm Batman doing Batman stuff, because there are 1 million Batman books that come out any given month. Resurrection of Magneto, number 2 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Luciano Vecchio. Storm has headed to mutant hell to get Magneto out of it. In this issue, they chat about it a bunch and ultimately break out of mutant hell and find maybe who has been manipulating things and been holding Magneto there. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, first off, I love the kind of like almost 80s look we got to Magneto in this. It had real old school vibe to it, which I thought was really cool. And he was crying blood, which is tough to watch.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I just think that there was a lot of fun monsters in this ish and great art, and I'm not sure what's going to go down, but it's interesting, and I'm having an interesting time.
I feel like all those blood tears, would you expect? I really wanted to see him stuff two Kleenexes in his eye sockets like it was a bloody nose. Mm-hmm. Just like holding the edge of the sockets.
Oh my God, that was such a gross visual, dude. Why did you do that to me?
These are just the thoughts.
Oh my God.
These are the takes. It is. He just never wipes his face. But
and then pulling it out with the. Oh, that would just be.
Because there's going to be some clotting.
Yeah. And it might stick to your eyelid and you're trying to pull out the tissue. Oh, stop, man.
Yeah. It's gross. But that's what happens. That's why you don't cry blood tears unless you're Magneto or that one dude from Casino Royale. Big Tell.
Oh, yeah. Big Tell.
Was he in Mutant Hell? Maybe.
He probably is.
This book is – I like this issue a lot. Man, this is epic, like Phantom of the Opera, like organ scored comic book writing here. It's like – like very epic. I liked all the nameplates thing was cool. And Resurrection, this is redefining Magneto as like a hero, like maybe the biggest hero of the X-Men, like going so hard here that Magneto's getting more in a classic comic book inversion. Professor X is compromising his morals. He'll do it for breakfast. He'll do anything to keep his
He'll sell anybody.
His plans going.
He doesn't give a fuck.
Magneto, meanwhile, is like, I could have saved more people. Like, it's just like such the flip, and I think that's interesting. I don't know.
And one of them is a hero, and the other is supposed to be the villain. You know what I mean? But
both heroes now.
/ Back to School number 3 from Image Comics by Zoe Thorogood. This is following Cassie Hack. Back in the day, as she is joined together in a school for slasher hunters, in this issue, they're tracking down a giant spider body horror type thing at a strip club. This series is great.
Spider boobs, man.
Spider boobs, spider boobs, spider boobs. This is, we talked to Tim Seeley about this a little bit on last week's live show.
Oh, we should have talked to him about it.
And... doesn't even make sense.
Got you there.
And this is great. Like, it's just, it's very idiosyncratic to what Zoe Thorogood likes to do. The art is gorgeous. It's a fun adventure. There's some great character stuff that happens throughout here as well. Really enjoying this book.
Same. I agree. Fantastic. But,
you know, I know what you're going to say.
No Vlad.
Yep.
Vlad's pushed to the side, yeah, for like a panel, and he's like, I guess I'll just go back to my hut. And you're like, God damn it, man. I get it. We're doing a bigger story, and not everything can have everybody, but just I just need a little more Vlad.
Vlad is bad. Cassie is sassy.
Okay.
Great. Punisher number 4.
I already said it was good. Great.
Yeah, there we go. Punisher number 4 from Marvel, written by David Pappose, art by Dave Wachter. This is the final issue of this series. We don't really know when the new Punisher is going to show up again, but we're getting Joe Garrison versus the new Jigsaw as they both accept their new identities. Pete, as the #1 Punisher fan, why don't you take this away?
Stunchucks.
I knew you were going to say that first.
Stunchucks makes no sense. I love the idea of it.
Wait, you don't like stunchucks?
No, I don't like stunchucks.
Oh, wow.
Because it doesn't make any sense. For a stun thing to work, you got to kind of press it up against them. Nunchucks, you're just hitting them lightly. There's no real way you can get a stun effect.
He's hitting people a little bit harder with these nunchucks.
Are you saying that I don't hit people hard enough with my nunchucks? Is that what you're trying to say?
I guess you don't. Well, maybe you're using nunchucks.
If you hit that, but then you got to hold the, you know, it just, to me, I love the idea of it, but I laughed out loud because I was like, you can't have stunchucks. It doesn't make, it's not practical.
Continuity-wise, I don't see that we can do some sort of stunchucks.
Okay, fair, Fair point.
Is this continuity? Because you're saying it's physically impossible. Is that like...
That's what I'm saying.
That's like the continuity of reality.
It's physically impossible to use Nunchucks. And the reason is that a Nunchuck, a known weapon used by ninjas all over, as well as myself, does not touch a man... For long enough to stun.
And also a stun has to have like a point of
contact.
You gotta
push up your glasses when you're doing that.
Yeah, there's gotta be.
What's that like?
I understand. Yes, I am. I'm glaving out over here and being too much of a nerd about it. But it just kind of pulled me out of the story a little bit. But again, I stand behind it. It's a fun idea. It's a fun idea, but it just doesn't.
I want to say I was pulled out of it as well for the exact same reason. Go ahead, Justin.
Honestly, like every other thing that happens in this book makes total sense. Only the stun chucks was the real breaking point for me. When he drives that motorcycle through glass and falls. And the villain gets impaled by a giant spike and then talks for another 5 minutes. I was like, sick organs, dude. Really working. Dude.
Yo, you got sick organs, bro.
Yeah, sick organs.
You got, like, your organs are really impressive.
I've enjoyed this series. Don't know what their plans are for Joe Garrison going forward, but this new take on Jigsaw is a very fun take.
I love that. Very modern
and interesting. Joe Garrison finally identifying, accepting his identity Punisher. I thought it was really good character moments and well drawn by Dave Wachter. So good series. I'm not a big Punisher fan like Pete over there, but I had a fun time reading this one.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I liked his moment of kind of like battle cry of owning the Punisher monocle. So I thought that was a real cool kind of thing and well earned. But I know you just did
a little Freudian slip or whatever. But the idea that Punisher has a monocle is very
fun. Just love it.
Punisher monocle. He owns the Punisher monocle. He bought it at an antique store.
That'd be fun. All right, why don't we move on to Jill and the Killers, number two from Odie Press, written by Olivia Quarto-Briggs, art by Roberto Ingranata. This is the second issue following up on a group of teens that are investigating
journalism.
Big mystery that turns out to be a real mystery. It's the second issue following a character named Jill and some killers from Odie Press. No. Anyway, we talked to Olivia about this on a couple of shows back, so check it out in the podcast feed. But very fun mystery. I'm having a good time reading this. This is twisty and interesting. It's funny at turns as well. What do you guys think?
It's too bad we can't go back in time and talk to her again because I have so many more questions. But I think this was very enjoyable. I loved all the fun kind of twists and turns. And it does a great job of getting you excited for more. Also, the art is extremely enjoyable.
It's hard to balance the tones that we're talking about here of like keeping a, you know, intense, scary murder mystery or future murder mystery going while also doing a ton of jokes. And this book does it.
Power Pack, Into the Storm, number two from Marvel, written by Louise Simonson, art by June Brigman. We've got the Power Pack is teaming up with a chameleon and a snark fighting against a bunch of broods. Meanwhile, Franklin Richards is trying to coordinate a bunch of folks, including White Maiden sentient ship. Does that make any sense to anybody who isn't reading Power Pack back in the 1980s? I don't know, but it makes sense to me.
This series feels like
you wrote Power Pack.
This series feels like it was a like a Saturday morning cartoon in like the mid 80s where you could just like do a ton of coke and write whatever you want, and they were like, got it, drawing it, it's on the air tomorrow. Because it's wild what's happening here. And they're like, no, we got to go to my dream form has to go to space to battle the brood ship with these anthropomorphic animals who are from space. Don't tell mom. I was like, okay.
I got some questions. So do you think that like a writer back in the day, the heyday that you're talking about was like, man, I can't come up with any ideas. if only there was this kind of white powdery substance that would just jolt my brain with like insane ideas.
Yeah. Create creativity dust.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah. The brood ship design is very cool and very fun. As a Power Pack fan from back in the day, I'm having a good time with this. Duke number 3 from Image Comics / Skybound, art by Tom Riley. Duke is in prison with the Baroness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Baroness. Nice job.
And a bunch of other folks are coming to kill him at the same time. Pete, your IGI. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yo, but, Joe.
Were
you going to call him a G.I. Jane? Because that's going to get you slapped.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this. Major Blood, cool stuff. Fun Baroness reveal. Duke's dealing with some stuff, man. All right. Great art, great action, fun last panel. This is just a blast. I don't know if it hits as much as you don't know the characters and the names and stuff, but I'm really enjoying this kind of like Duke who's got some PTSD he's trying to work through and trying to figure shit out. So I don't know, man. I like the quiet guy in the corner of the cell that you don't want to make angry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is great. I love just the – it's such an intentional like art design and type of comic. Like the red backdrop for the invasion, like it feels – it has that animated feel of the cartoon while still bringing all this other cool, more modern stuff to bear and setting Duke up as a hero. But I agree, like when you're like – when someone's like, look, it's me, the – Mr. Blood. And I'm like,
Major Blood, dude.
Okay. Oh, he's a major. He got promoted. I knew him as Mr. Blood.
Yeah. You knew him before he really found his
calling. But in the army, I think you start as a mister and then you get promoted to become a major. Mister, minor, major.
I think
they're like, your drill sergeant's like, okay, mister, come on in. Apocalypse Now. They're like, you misters are in big trouble.
I think they call them maggots.
That's maggots, that's what I'm thinking. So it's maggot blood.
I agree with you that I feel like there's a little bit of some reveals going on here that, I don't know, it's very hard to parse nostalgic familiarity with things because, like, I think what worked about the first issue of Void Rivals is, to be honest, I did not know which Transformer that was, but the surprise of, oh, there's a Transformer here was enough. And there have been a lot of things throughout Transformers where it feels like, oh, this is an oh shit moment because of what it means for the characters we're reading, whether you know it or not. Duke right now, even though I like it, the Tom Riley art is great, is leading a little bit into flip page reveals of, and here's this character, which I just don't know them, so
So,
but you're like, is that traffic cone? And it is, sometimes it is.
Oh man, trash can
roadblock. Roadblock, you asshole.
Trash can.
I'm pretty sure its name is traffic cone.
Printer cartridge.
Mr. Softy, Mr. Softy.
Oh, oil slick. Carnage number 4.
Isn't there one named Oil Slick?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Guy, man, Blender. Alex, you nailed
Snow
it.
Snow Job.
Yes. Oh, we all know about Snow Job.
He's got that white powder, right?
Sweater
Carnage
weather.
Number 4 from Marvel, written by Torin Grodback, art by Per Perez. In this issue, Carnage is coming face to face with Flash Thompson. And things do not turn out the way that you might expect. This series is going so much harder than I thought it would as a person who does not particularly like Carnage. I do wish it would go back to the weird religiosity of the first 3 issues, but at the same time, the anti-Venom Carnage fed in this issue was pretty badass.
It's funny you say that because I liked the sort of culty nature of Carnage that was going on for a while there, but I thought this was great. This issue really plays to me like a Joker Batman issue.
100%. Ooh.
And yes. It's great in that way. Like, it really puts Carnage as just a great foil to Flash Thompson, who is like just not prepared to deal. Like, he's at a loss of the whole issue, but it's done in an interesting way. And, you know, it's a real, Carnage is a tough character for me to get on board with, because he's always just like, I'm crazy and I kill everyone. And in this, it feels like there's a little bit more there, and it has like that Joker quality to it that I was really excited about.
I agree with the Zelbatron and the fact that this is really badass.
Great. Rare Flavors, number 4 from Boom Studios, written by Rem V, art by Felipe Andrade. This issue, we're dealing with the fallout of our main characters, who are a demon who eats people, and the guy who has been tasked with doing his documentary, realizing, oh, they know about each other now, or more specifically, the documentarian knows about the demon. Yeah. And what do they do about that now that they have this information? This is my favorite issue of this series so far, because it feels like it's finally moved past the preamble and we can get into the really good character stuff.
Do you think it's because after like a really good meal, it's maybe anybody can kind of like talk things out and be okay with, you know, who they are?
It's true. 100%.
Especially when you're eating human.
And any Thanksgiving, when people are like, do you want to cut the turkey? And I'd be like, I want to fucking cut you.
Oh.
Yeah, and then
we got to deal with that. We got to deal with that and get past that and then have pie.
It was a little weird to me, though, that it was like, he finds, because, you know, the last issue is like, oh, shit, what's he going to do? And he's just kind of like, oh, okay, so you have a sad backstory, and I can understand that, you know, being a starved little demon had to be really tough. All right, yeah, now I'm cool with it. Let's make a doc. I was a little, I felt like I wanted there, because we spent so much time without him knowing, and now that he knows, and he was immediately like, same issue, like, let's do this. I got a great meal in my belly. I wanted to kind of be like, all right, let's battle with this a little bit before.
I think there's something else going on there. There's too much of a quick turn in that character in our documentarian.
Yeah.
So I think there's more to spool out over the next couple of issues.
So you're saying when he walked towards the beach to think, like, more things happen than we know about.
Yeah. In his brain.
Okay.
But the thing, you know, my grandmother always used to say, nothing humanizes people more than sitting down for a meal and eating human. So, like, I think that's what this is all about.
I got a lot of questions about your upbringing.
And we don't have time. Makes a lot of sense. We have other comics to talk about.
Yeah. Did your grandma dump people down a well?
No,
Wolverine number 44 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy and Victor Laval, art by Corey Smith. We're picking up with Sabretooth having killed Quentin Quire, seemingly, though he's actually a disembodied head at this point.
Yeah,
also having killed Dokken, and maybe one of the Sabretooths. Well, they haven't killed Laura / X-23 yet. They've ripped up her jaw. And now Wolverine is getting his hands and feet sewed back on so we can go after them. This crossover continues to be wild.
Well, this is the first issue where I'm really back on board here, because I'm glad that we finally sat in the history of Wolverine and Sabretooth. It's almost a touching tale of these two. So I'm glad that we kind of got a little bit of that in this kind of heightened battle royale on Wolverine's birthday, which is kind of a sweet thing that Sabretooth every year on his birthday, you know, goes to visit his buddy. But
it's
like
when we went to see a movie for your birthday, Pete, and then you sat in a different theater.
That was a nice, you know, if you weren't such a dick afterwards, I would say it was an unbelievable, maybe the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me, where it's like, hey, I'm not going to make you do something you don't want to do because it's your birthday. Why don't you go see the movie you want to see? And then, you know.
What about when I came to visit you on your birthday and I killed your girlfriend, Silver Fox?
Yeah, that was really hard, and I've never forgiven you for that.
Yeah. You know, reading this issue that's so Sabretooth-focused, I almost expect to see Iron Fist show up, because I don't know if you know, but Sabretooth first appeared in Iron Fist number 14.
Oh wow.
No, that's just that, you know, when you're doing, when you're reviewing comics, it's important to do the research. You gotta know the history. That's what it's all about. Continuity. You know, human history is just our continuity. And like this continuity is
awesome. So when you're saying human history, you're talking about Wolverine?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about our real life history. Like, we our continuity. Like a continuity thing we have about the movie theater. That's right. My.
I don't really have anything to my life except comics, so that kind of is my continuity.
Yeah, I was silly trying to tie it back to the comic book. I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's anyway, crazy.
Good book. What do we?
I do enjoy this a lot. The art is like a lot of body horror, fun stuff there. And like I said, when we were talking about some earlier stuff, the X-Men universe is going so hard right now, and it's fun to watch it just like go, like being intense in a way that it's not usually.
The mug got me. I mean, that was a gut wrench.
Oh yeah, great scene.
No better gift than a mug. I
saw Phantom Road, number 9 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. We're following two people who are on a weird angelic purgatory, we don't really know, road trip, trying to deliver something. Last road issue, trip. That something hatched into a tiny little mushy angel, or again, something like that.
Mushy?
Finding out a lot more about the mythology here, as well as our main characters. I thought this was a great issue, again, drawn really well by Gabriel Chwalta. But Pete, you're pumping your fists. Take it away.
Oh, my God. What a fucking great issue this is. Oh, my God. When you think, you know, the story just like keeps changing. It keeps getting crazier. And you think like, okay, well, this now we've got to be at a settling point, right? Nope. No, man, this really cranks us up to 11 here. Just I can't say enough about the art. Just so spooky. The stillness that it shows. Mm. I know it's a still medium, but like still like just really impressive. Creepy yet amazing. This continues to be such an impressive read. And what I mean by that is like every time I open it, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to fucking get here. And I'm still having a great time.
Yeah, I agree. The covers establish that stillness you're talking about, Pete, in such a good way. And then the comic reads fast, but it is just such a like nice, chill pace to it. Great emotional moments. But man, this book just doesn't tip its hand. It's so like specific with what we're getting in each issue. And we're getting enough to keep us in the story. But I still am like, no idea what's going on.
Yes.
Not a clue.
But you're having a great time. You're 100%. Not like, oh, this is so frustrating. It's, yeah.
And that's confident comic storytelling.
Yes.
Cable number 2 for Marvel, written by Fabian Nicieza, art by Scott Eaton and Lon Medina. In this issue, our two Cables, Young Cable and Old Cable, are fighting against Grey Gargoyle and then exploring a bigger mystery involving some tech that's attacking the Marvel Universe. It is very funny to me that they keep specifying every issue. By the way, this is different from the tech thing that's going on with the rest of the X-Men. We're doing our own thing here, just us two Cables.
Got to be clear.
But at the same time, Fabian's having a lot of fun with these two Cables. I'm really enjoying reading it. I'm really spoiler
reveal.
The fight with the Grey Gargoyle is ridiculous. The rest of the issue is like mostly leading towards bits, and I'm key having a good time. Yeah, exactly.
Four slices of key lime pie is shocking.
That's a lot of
too
pie.
Much. That's like a whole pie. Half pie?
It's glorious, depending on the pie. On the pie, but key lime is, I mean, that's too much key lime.
It's a great pie,
first
though, right?
Absolutely. No. Have you ever had the chocolate covered key lime pie on a stick from Steve's?
I have. I actually, this is maybe the worst flex. I know key lime pie, Steve, and have known him for like 15 years.
Why is that the worst flex?
Because that's the best flex.
You know Steve on a stick? Stick Steve?
For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, congratulations. But second, key lime pie, Steve. Steve's Key Lime Pie is like a Brooklyn Red Hook thing. And when I bartended and hung out at a bar over there, he was a regular and know him very well.
Ah, That's awesome.
And was those he just like drunk so at the end of the bar going like, I love pie, but man, it's just not. I want something that's easier to eat, you know, just something you can kind of pick up with your hands a little bit, you know.
I will say those are very good, but the chocolate, too much. I prefer just the graham cracker. Really? And lime.
Interesting.
Wow. Interesting. Very interesting.
Great review of table number two.
But, so talking about table number two, I thought for sure we get this reveal of a villain and cool villain. Mm-hmm. I thought for sure it was going to be Strife. And I wanted it so bad to be Strife because then they're the same. It's all the same dude doing it.
I thought it was going to be Key Lime Steve, and it wasn't.
That guy's a villain. Let me ask you guys, would you rather be young you hanging out with old you or old you hanging out with young you?
Ooh, that's tough. I got to go young because at least you're like, this is what old me looks like and I can make some better decisions. Or old, it's just got to be so fucking frustrating, man.
Yeah.
Because that young guy ain't fucking listening to shit and that's going to drive you fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Old Anyways, me, Cable. Think.
Hold on. Cable you two. Said young and Alex, you're saying old. You'd rather be old. You'd be like,
I'd rather be old. I feel like I am more aware of what's going on in my life and my surroundings as a old person than a young person.
That's interesting. I would rather be young because, like, I feel like if I was old, I'd be like, oh, this idiot's got so much shit to do. And he would be annoying because you'd always be thinking about all the things. But if you're young, you can just be roasting old you about how old you are.
Yeah. Would you hook up with yourself?
Yeah, what? Kiss a little.
That's not even that a thing?
Explore.
Yeah, play around, piss in the corner.
If we can get back to the comic a little bit.
You know, this
Cable
the good stuff.
Versus the Gray Gargoyle was fun. And then the Cable and Young Cable, you know, got a little bit weird, but all right. But the thing at the end, which drove me nuts, because it's like a stupid Zalbin joke, where it was just like, always womb at the top. I was like, boo. Like, don't get cute with the fucking wording. At the
That joke that definitely caught me off guard. Because I was like, all drama, all like big sort of scary reveal, and then like wild like pun joke. At the end.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. All right, why don't we talk about Undiscovered Country number 28 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Cabancoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. We're really getting to it here as we're getting closer to the center of the spiral. In this issue, we find out even more about the mythology of the world, as well as our main characters. Maybe one of them dies by the end here. What do you think, Pete?
Very Looney Tunes issue here, the old train going off the cliff one. So, I think this was, continues to be amazing art, very creative storytelling, tons of twists and turns. We've been through so much with this comic, and it's still just as kind of creative and cool. I'm not bored with it or anything like that. I just thought the old train off a cliff was a little kind of, I don't know. It just caught, I was like, man, what are we, the fucking coyote over here? What's going on with this?
Wow, that's a bridge too far. Just like Stunchucks. That's the Stunchucks of this comic. This is a wild, it's so like mythological and crazy. I mean, something we've talked a lot about. You can feel it building toward an end now, and I think that's nice. Yet still introducing wild concepts like these people, these workers who are genetically bred in the Midwest to be absolute like giant meatheads is very fun.
The Invincible Iron Man, number 15 from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Chris Lee. In this issue, Iron Man is finally fighting back against Orcus alongside White Queen. I want to go to Justin, who is our romance reporter, to talk about this one. What'd you think?
Fucking bullshit, man.
Why? I love this relationship. Pete, you don't believe in love. You don't believe in this tone.
Whoa, that's not true.
Love.
I don't believe in this relationship. You can't say a blanket statement like, I don't believe in love, motherfucker.
This is
back up your truck.
This is love. I really like this relationship. We get sort of a moment here where it's like, uh-oh, are we not revisiting this? And they better. I know it's going to get crazy with whatever's going to be happening to these characters, but this is the most fun pairing in Marvel Comics right now. Please keep this going post X-Men smash-up.
It's an interesting match for sure, and I'm really impressed with how much I don't hate it. Because I'm like, this is a train wreck of a relationship. But it's actually showing different sides of them in ways that I wasn't ready for. And I've been impressed by it.
Pete, I will say, hold on to that line. I think that'll be great in your next relationship. I'm really impressed that I don't hate this.
You think I should use that later?
I said, hold on to it. That's a banger.
You use that in real life? Yeah, you're trying to hurt me, and I don't appreciate that. It's too bad we couldn't talk to the Dukes about this, because it'd be fun to get it.
He's going to be on the show in March, but I understand that that cuts deep, so why don't we move on and talk about Deep Cuts, number 5, from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark. Once again, art by Judy Ba. This is not a Radiant Black tie-in, despite what you might think. Instead, this is an ongoing anthology about jazz, and in this issue we're getting a jazz critic who is struggling with a new jazz player and whether he can understand his music. I was a little off the last issue, to be honest with you. I found it a little hard to hook into. This one was great. I really liked the journey we went on here. I thought Judy Ba's art was awesome. Yes. It's so fun. There was a great sense of humor here as well as we followed this critic in his journey towards understanding everything. It's a little bit like Fear and Loathing Las Vegas, but not a road trip. And I just heard a really good time reading this one.
I agree. This really got me so back into this. You know, the last issue I was like, oh, I'm not sure. But this really just kind of put me back on this train of loving this comic. And the mood, the tone, the way it shows music in a panel, really so impressive, so creative. I was just really impressed with the ride that you go on in this issue. You kind of get this critic where you're like, what's this fucking guy's deal? But man, really, really just impressive writing, impressive art, great storytelling, and such an amazing package. Deep Cut.
Deep Cut. This this is one of my favorite reads right now, ongoing comic, like deep explorations of one particular story, each issue, different art style each time. Great character work, great storytelling. This one has like an almost famous vibe, if you're familiar with that Cameron Crowe movie. And it's one of the more unique books on the stands when it comes to like, oh, this is not this type of story isn't told very much. And to have such a focus on music while also getting into deeper philosophical and existential commentary is really great.
Yeah.
Last, let's talk about The Immortal Thor, number 7 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Martin Coquello. This is the second issue of this arc where Thor and Loki are jumping back to a origin story, and we find this is the first time they engage with the Utgard Loki.
Utgard.
It also weaves through a bunch of real Norse myths and give them a little bit of a Marvel sheen. What'd you guys think about this one?
Amazing art. Love the splash page and giant panels, cool monsters in action. Weird that it like turned into an eating and drinking contest, but fun-ish.
So I'll just mention those are actual Norse myths that they were playing with here. That whole thing about the contest, it's obviously a little different in the Norse myths, but they tweaked it and played with it. The whole thing, spoiler here, but about like, who can consume all? It's fire. Who? What am I drinking? It's the ocean. Those are all directly from Norse myths. So there you go.
Yeah, this was great. I really like where this is heading with the meta comic book. The villains gathering around being like, this idiot.
The meta gets a little weird, though.
That's really fun, and I'm excited to see that next phase happen.
And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come back out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Stay warm out there, because as always,
it's sweater weather. All right.